You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we are smoking the Macanudo Inspirado Orange.
Yeah, we got some orange in our old-fashioned glasses and some orange in our cigars here.
Hey, you know, and that wasn't even by design. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what does this cigar consist of, since you have better pronunciation than I do, sir?
That's half the fun of the show, is watching you mispronounce Spanish words.
Yeah.
This is a Macanudo cigar, which I haven't smoked a whole lot of Macanudo cigars. They tend to be a little bit milder, but this one's rated as a medium to full.
Yeah, as of right now, you know, within the first third of the cigar, it is definitely more of a medium right now, but it does seem to have a complex blend. It's not a boring smoke or anything to that effect.
Yeah, it's got a Olancho San Agustin wrapper, a Honduran Jamastrin binder, Olar and Palito Cubano filler from the Dominican, more of the Jamastrin from Honduras, and Ometepe from Nicaragua.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not picking up on a whole lot of spice here yet, but, I mean, it... I'm picking up on some, like, woody notes, and, I mean, it's so complex that I really haven't been able to figure out exactly what all I'm tasting just yet.
Yeah, like I said, it's, you know, Macanudos are usually a little too mild for me, but this is definitely stronger and more complex than what I've experienced from Macanudo in the past. Like, Macanudo is a good cigar if you like a mild cigar. It's something I recommend to, like, first-time smokers.
Well, I would say mild to medium. You know, I mean,
definitely a stronger cigar than the standard Macanudo fare.
I mean, I think our definition of mild is not what most people would consider, you know, mild. You know, we might take what we consider to be mild, and it might take a first-time smoker and be like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't know, you know. I mean, it's just, since we typically do lean toward the, you know, the Habano, the heavier spice and the fuller body cigars, I think our scales are weighted a little bit differently than what most people.
It's definitely a smoky. I mean, it's producing some nice thick smoke, too, so. It's going to be an interesting cigar.
Yeah, and I mean, it's got a good aroma to it as well.
And since this being episode 44 of the podcast, you know, when you think of 44, you think of the 44 Magnum. And when you think of the 44 Magnum, you think of Clint Eastwood and Dirty Harry. So this is going to be our Dirty Harry episode.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Dirty Harry is he always had a bone to pick. You know, he wasn't politically correct and wasn't necessarily by the book, but he got results. And, you know, there's been some news come down from the FDA on some shit that they're looking to try to impose on premium cigars. And I'm not all about that shit either.
Yeah, we don't normally get political on the show, but this is something very important to us as cigar smokers. So we just want to make sure y'all are up to date on what's going on. The FDA has recently passed regulations that they are starting to regulate premium tobacco. And it kind of stemmed from the explosion of vaping. And when they wanted to regulate vaping, we kind of all got wrapped up in the net. And the option that they've selected, that this is what they're going to implement, is called option one, which was the strictest regulations. There was a lot of talk trying to define a premium cigar and exempt that from those regulations, but unfortunately it's passed. And with these regulations, the main impact is anything made after 2007 is now subject to FDA approval. So what that means is pretty much every cigar we've reviewed on this show, anything that's come out in the last 10 years, for those things to continue to be sold, are going to have to go through an FDA regulation process. What that means to you as the consumer is, it's going to make stuff harder to get. Like I said, there's not going to be as much innovation because, you know, I said, it's going to be an expensive process to make a new cigar brand. A lot of your smaller boutique, you know, manufacturers that only maybe produce one or two sticks, it's highly likely that those may go away completely if they can't afford to go through the regulation process. And the price of your cigars are going to go way up. I mean, your $8 stick's about to become a $20 stick. Also, with these regulations, no more free samples. So if a rep comes to your cigar shop, you know, they can't just hand out a cigar anymore and let you try one because I'm not even sure that may even affect like, you know, your discounts where you're, like, they're having an event, you know, you buy one, you get one free, something like that. It may also do away with that as well. These regulations will go into effect in August. You know, the industry has that amount of time to try to come into, you know, basically anything you need. If you're going to produce one, you got to get it out before then, because basically anything that's on the market now that falls into that post-2007 window has 2 years to go through the approval process, and they can stay on the shelves during that time. But if they don't make it through the approval process, or if it's just, you know, too expensive of a process, it's going to go away, except for like the real old, you know, cigars that have been around forever. But yeah, this is going to kill innovation and new cigars.
Yeah, and I think there was a White House .org petition going around looking for 100,000 signatures. You know, Cigar Rights of America have, you know, has basically put together a petition and is working with, you know, trying to basically get an exemption to the regulations.
Yeah, there's a few potential good things. There's some people, some senators and stuff trying to get a law passed that will exempt premium cigars from those regulations. There's also the House Appropriation Committee, which funds the FDA, is trying to pass basically a budget resolution saying that they will not fund any FDA programs that will regulate cigars. But that's not a law. That's something that will have to be approved every year in the budget. So really, we need some kind of like law in place that protects your cigar rights or overrules these FDA regulations. So what you need to do is, there's a White House petition going around. We're going to be posting links to that on our Facebook page, and they'll be in the show notes of this episode. And also, you need to join the Cigar Rights of America. That's like the big pro-cigar lobby. Like I said, you go to their website. Even if you don't want to join, they have links to where you can sign petitions. They have links to email your congressman for whatever your state district is, and, you know, write them a letter telling them that you want them to support the, you know, protecting of cigar rights and stuff like that. So there's a lot of, even if you don't, you know, it's like $35 a year, so it's not that expensive to, and you get like two cigars when you join. So like I said, it's not that expensive a thing to support and help protect your rights. But then, like I said, there's also a lot of resources on that website of how to contact your congressman and tell them you're not down with these FDA regulations and they need to protect, you know, your cigar rights.
Yeah, I mean, this is one, you know, people need to get out and make their voices heard. You know, too often do we see the government try to, you know, step in and overreach, and, you know, where they put exemptions and rules on the masses, they have a tendency to exempt themselves from the same standards and everything. So,
yeah,
you know.
So if you like, you know, smoking cigars, if you like hearing two idiots talk about cigars, definitely need to support these, you know. Yeah, you know, tell your congressman not to support the FDA and support like the pro cigar protection laws that are up, you know, for vote. And like I said, we'll have links to all that information in the show notes, and we'll post them on the Cigar Nerds Facebook page as well. And with that, we'll be right back with some Dirty Harry.
Stay tuned.
I know what you're thinking, punk. You're thinking, did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Now, to tell you the truth, I forgot myself in all this excitement. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and will blow your head clean off, you could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Cigar Nerds Podcast, episode 44, most powerful podcast in the world, and it can blow your ears clean off. So you got to ask yourself one question, punk. Do you want to be entertained? Well, do ya?
I mean, you actually got the quote pretty much right. You know, I got to say, when it comes to the Dirty Harry movies, there are some really great quotes, but it's always really funny to me how they always kind of get jumbled together. Like, I think that between the five films, like, well, I don't know. I'll say four films because there was an exception to, you know, the traditional tagline. So, I mean,
there's like, if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, we're talking about the movies that made, well, I won't say made Clint Eastwood famous, but it definitely, because, I mean, he was already doing a lot of shit before these movies came out, but it's probably one of the most iconic roles of Clint Eastwood. When you think of Clint Eastwood, you think of Dirty Harry, probably the outlaw Josie Wales, the man with no name.
Yeah, Harry Callahan definitely comes to mind.
Yeah. And he also made the Smith & Wesson 44 Magnum Model 29 famous.
Yes. Yeah, those guns are just impressive, even by today's standards. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, I know we've had the Desert Eagle and what's the other one, the 500.
Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, as he quotes in the movie, this is the 44 Magnum, most powerful handgun in the world. And at the time, which was 1971 for the first Dirty Harry movie, it was the most powerful handgun in the world. Since then, we've got the 50 caliber Desert Eagle, but Smith & Wesson was not happy about no longer having the most powerful handgun in the world, so they released the Smith & Wesson 500, which is just a freaking hand cannon.
Not to downplay the... I mean, just a 44, though, I would still put that in the hand cannon category most folks.
I've shot a couple, and like I said, they hurt.
But, I mean, that's definitely not to downplay, you know, the Desert Eagle or anything by any means. I mean, all three of those, I would say, you've definitely got to have respect for. Otherwise, you're going to end up on a, you know, slab in a morgue somewhere or on stupid gun fails on YouTube.
Yeah, with a broke nose and a cracked tooth.
And that's all if you're lucky.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to do the Clint Eastwood single-hand shooting of the 44 Magnum, or you're going to wind up with a cracked skull.
Yeah. Yeah. That was always impressive to me, just watching, you know, how accurate. And I'm like, that's no.
Yeah,
that's,
just like
that's cinema magic for you folks.
He's shooting blanks out of that thing. Doesn't have quite the recoil as a full, you know, 44 wad cutter does.
But yeah, I don't know, man. I've always been a big fan of the Dirty Harry films. I mean, the quotes are you know, timeless and just, you know, it's kind of weird. Like, you know, it starts out as really kind of a detective drama, but, you know, there were throughout the films, you know, times where I had flashbacks to, I wonder if this where, you know, some of the ideas for the Punisher films came about, or Pulp Fiction, or...
Last thing is, these movies has influenced so many things. I mean, this is pretty much where the rogue cop action movie started. Like, pretty much everything since then has pretty much been based on Dirty Harry.
Well, I would say rogue cop, and then, you know, there were some of the films that almost had that buddy cop feel to them as well, you know, where him and the partner are giving each other shit and going back and forth, and
but yeah, there's definitely a, when you watch all the movies, there is a formula for making a Dirty Harry movie, and you've seen so many other movies kind of pick, you know, a part of that formula, and because, like, so basically, if you want to make a Dirty Harry movie, here's how you do it. You have your opening scene where you introduce whoever the bad guy is in the movie. Then, very early on in the movie, you have a random action sequence where whatever catchphrase of the movie is done, and it for some reason in all of these movies, and we'll talk about it more when we get into the individual films, it's always while Harry's having lunch. This dude should never have lunch, because every time he stops somewhere for lunch, a random robbery or terrorist attack or something happens to cause him to say the catchphrase and kill somebody.
You do not want to be in his vicinity, nor do you want to be his partner.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. In the second half of the movie, if he has a partner, the a partner is going to either get injured badly or die, causing him to go, you know, kind of rogue on a little vengeance thing, which you've seen in tons of movies. And then the final action sequence with the bad guys, he will again say the catchphrase of the movie as he offs the the bad guy.
Typically in some fucked up, unbenign fashion.
Yeah, like I said, every single Dirty Harry movie falls into that, you know, formula, except for like maybe one or two. But yeah, you see that.
I think it was the...
blueprint.
What was it? Was it the Enforcer that kind of didn't follow that model? Yeah, I was like,
there's not really a catchphrase in that. And the Deadpool as well, it kind of went off, because I say, and we'll get to it when we talk about the Deadpool. That kind of happened at a later time when... You know, in the 70s, it was always about the lone hero cop movie.
Did you say Deadpool?
The Deadpool, not Deadpool. but yeah, in the 70s, you know, that was before the modern buddy cop film. Like I said, it was always a lone hero. If he had a partner, you know the partner was going to die. Or if you had a love interest. Love interest or partner in an old cop movie, you were guaranteed you were going to die. Sometimes both of them would die. Just... something to make that final fight personal. You never wanted to be the hero cop's partner in any of those old 70s cop films.
But then, I mean, that was kind of the thing about Dirty Harry, though, is, you know, from his perspective, yeah, he's the hero and everything. But, I mean, from a bureaucratic and a procedural standpoint, he was public enemy number one.
Oh, yeah. And that kind of fit with the times, too, because in the 70s, there was a very, you know, big political swing to rein in the police. Like, you know, the cops from the 50s and 60s were kind of seen as,
a little bit overly racist, aggressive and bigoted, stuff like
that.
And
so kind of through the 70s into the early 80s, that whole political correctness, you know, that's when we got stuff like Miranda and a lot of the, you know, when you're reading case laws and stuff about, you know, search and seizure and all these constitutional limitations on police. Those things were coming about, you know, in those whatever late 60s, early 70s when this took place. So it kind of fits in the time that this movie, you know, actually came out.
Yeah, because that was one of the things, you know, it had been a while since I had originally seen the movie. So I went back, rewatched everything in preparation for this pod. And, you know, the in political correctness and like... You know, the sexism and racism and stuff. That I forgot how apparent that stuff is.
Which is kind of funny because you see the stuff he says in this movie, and then you're like, man, no one can get away with saying that again. But then when you watch Gran Torino, it's just as racist and sexist as like maybe some of the stuff from the 70s was. But since it's Clint Eastwood, everyone's like, you get a pass.
Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of, you know, similar to, you know, people having, you know, being apprehensive about some of the language and stuff used in Django Unchained. And you had Samuel L. Jackson say, no, you're going to come out and you're going to say the line to my face and everything else.
So the very first of the Dirty Harry series starring Clint Eastwood is Inspector Harry Callahan, a.k.a. Dirty Harry, came out in 1971, directed by Don Siegel. Don Siegel, it was pretty much a pretty famous director for the time too. He made a lot of like some Western, some other big movies. He is also, if you've ever seen the very last John Wayne movie, the Shootist, that was a Don Siegel movie as well.
Yeah, and you know, this film was kind of interesting because it, you know, actually, you know, kind of played a little bit into the actual case of the Zodiac Killer a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
takes place in San Francisco.
Not to be confused with San Francisco, you know, PD. Our left leaning listeners, Ted Cruz, the memes flying around out there about him being the Zodiac.
Yeah, this was you know, the .44 caliber killer. So I get my serial killers confused, but yeah, basically, he kind of starts off as a sniper, sniping people who he perceives as being, I guess, morally corrupt. You know, at first he shoots some, like, you know, girl skinny dipping or something on a roof, and then he, like, sends a letter to the cop saying, you know, I'm going to kill either a priest or a black person if y'all don't give me $100,000, and going by the name of Scorpio, who, like I said, a reference to the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah, the Scorpio played by Andy Robinson. So, yeah, you know, that was kind of always another draw for these films.
And Andy Robinson has been in a bunch of movies. Yes. He's always a creepy son of a bitch.
I mean, I almost, when it came to some of the deaths and stuff like that, you know, like in this film, it was a skinny dipping and everything. So the morally, you know,
almost like a risque, horror movie.
Yeah, it almost followed that slasher antic. Like, oh, you're doing something naughty. And that was the random.
Because there's one scene, like I said, when he makes that threat that he's going to kill, he's on a roof in the middle of the daytime watching a church trying to decide who he's going to kill. And he sees a couple of gay black guys. And he's like, oh, yeah. He gets like super excited about it. He's like, those are the motherfuckers I'm going to kill. And then he kind of loses them in the tree and doesn't get his shot. And like a police helicopter comes overhead and runs him off. But like I said, it was and in the 70s, you know, that was probably considered morally wrong or, you know, like, but yeah, it's kind of weird that like that's what and some of these serial killers you do see that, you know, yes, where they're kind of got a weird twisted morality where they think, you know, people that don't think like them have to be punished, you know, and they're all, you know, like I said, psychopaths.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that in films like Idle Hands is a prime example. Like Idle Hands make the devil's work.
Wasn't that the Seth Green movie where the hand came alive?
Idle Hands, yeah, where he's like trying to chop off. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That's okay, it. Just make sure we're talking about the same movie.
But I don't know. You know, I thought this was kind of interesting. You know, because the chief of police, and the mayor, played by John Vernon, basically, you know, is assigning Callahan to the case, but they're reluctant, and you know,
it's, so like he gets results, but he's also a loose cannon.
Yeah, well, it was kind of, you know, I guess prior to this film was the incident involving Callahan with a naked man with a butcher knife.
Yeah, and that's probably one of my, you know, Spine's the famous quote that comes out of this movie, which I want to talk about that segment here in a second. This is probably one of my favorite lines because he's like, "I don't want any stuff happening like you in the Fillmore district. You know, that's my policy." And he's like, "Well, when I see a adult male chasing an adult female with intent to rape, I shoot the bastard. That's my policy." And he's like, "Well, how did you get intent out of that?" "Well, when a naked man chasing a woman with a hard on and a butcher knife, I really doubt he's collecting for the Red Cross." And then just walks up. And the mayor's like, "He's got a point."
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's Callahan's antics. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, it's so easy to kind of, you know, take a step back from a procedural standpoint and say, all right, this guy is just a dick and a loose cannon. But, you know, then he uses a rationale like that, and you're like, you know what? You're yielding results, and nobody's getting off, you know, due to a corrupt judge or politician or anything to that effect.
Yeah, and then we have the like I said, the first of the Harry's going to do something just to show he's a badass and give you the catchphrase of the movie scene where he stops for a hot dog and a bank happens to get robbed across the street. And that whole scene is just like has nothing to do with like the rest of the plot of the movie other than to introduce the catchphrase. But it shows what a badass he is because, like I said, he walks out still eating his hot dog, guns down three dudes with his .44, takes a shot in the leg from a shot, and then acts like he's like, "Eh, ruined my pants." And he's like, no reaction, just kind of walks up to the guy. And that's when you get the whole speech, like, you know, did I fire five shots or six?
Yeah. So he's like, did he fire six shots or only five? Well, to tell you the truth, all this excitement, I've kind of lost track of myself. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and it'll blow your head clean off, you got to ask yourself one question. Well, do you feel lucky?
Well, do you, punk?
Yes.
Oh, like I said, that's one of, like, when you think of Dirty Harry, you think of all these great one-liners and catchphrases, but you don't realize they're not all in the same movie.
I will say
it's like each one is introduced in a different movie.
And I'll say with that scene too, it was interesting because that's one of the few guys that actually made it away that Callahan didn't kill.
Like, it's because he ran out of ammo. That time he did fire six shots. And I do like the move when the guy's like, you know, after the guy surrenders, gives him the gun, and Harry starts to walk away. He's like, "Hey, man, I gots to know." So in this telling him, instead of telling him, like, "Yeah, I'm out of bullets," he turns around, like, points the gun at him and pulls the trigger, and it clicks. And the guy's like, "Oh," scares the crap out of him.
Ultimate dick move.
And then we get that, you know, when they finally send Harry after Scorpio, they give him a partner, and you know, he's like, you know, "All my partners die." Really? And it's, of course, it's like, you know, an Hispanic officer, and you get one of the other guys who's like one of the only one of Harry's Potter's Harry's partners to survive, Frank Frank DiGiorgio, played by John Mitchum, who's kind of like the typical fat cop. And he's like, you know, oh, yeah, Harry here, he's not racist at all. He hates everyone equally. And, like, you know, goes to list every single racial slur you could think of at the 70s. And then his new Mexican partner's like, well, how's he feel about Mexicans? He's like, oh, no, I hate Mexicans especially.
As bad as that scene was, like, it was that downplay of it all. Like,
yeah. I've heard my grandfather was a cop back in the day, too. And I think he stole half his lines from Dirty Harry. But he actually said that to a reporter one time when they asked him, like, are you racist? And he's like, no, ma'am, I hate everyone equally.
I mean, hey, in the argument of fairness, I mean, how much more fair can you be? I mean, I hold no qualms.
If someone's an asshole, they're an asshole. Don't matter what their, you know, race, creed, color, religious belief. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole. Yes.
And the whole scene too, where, you know, when Scorpio basically refuses to reveal the location, you know, of the girl that they've kidnapped and everything, demands a lawyer and tries to go through the procedure, like that whole torture scene, like where he's standing on the wounded leg and everything of that nature, like that made me grimace a little bit.
Scorpio, you know, they kind of thwart him from killing the priest by, you know, Harry actually pulls out a 458 Winchester Magnum sniper rifle and waits for him outside of a church, which, I mean, that was pre-Barrett 50 cal. That was a big boy gun right there. But, you know, he ends up getting away, and then he ends up kidnapping, like, some cheerleader or something and burying her alive. And you know, again, tries to ransom the city. If they don't give him the money, you know, he's going to, you know, let her die. And, you know, Harry just kind of searches his residence without any kind of warrant because they're running out of time and just beats the crap out of the guy. But, of course, the DA is like, oh, no, you violated his civil rights. We got to let him go. And I'm like, that's bullshit. Yeah. I was like, because before that, the guy beat the crap out of Harry and shot his partner. Like, even if you throw out the evidence from Harry searching his apartment illegally, you could have charged him with the other stuff. There's no way
somebody would have walking from
would have let that guy. Plus, I mean, there's exceptions to the Fourth Amendment, you know, and one of those is extenuating circumstances when there is like an emergency situation and a girl buried alive. Probably fits that emergency situation clause.
Well, and, you know,
but then the movie would have been an hour shorter if they had followed actual law.
But, you know, that also leads us to another underlying theme in the Dirty Harry thing, because Scorpio steals a bus full of children. Like, that was another thing that the whole series and everything was interesting is, like, the car chases, they always manage to, like, Harry just had a bad knack for choosing chase vehicles. Like, he would always, you know, like, occasionally he would have his car, but, you know, he steals a bus for a retirement home or something of that nature to chase a motorcycle. And it's like, somehow manages to keep up the entire time.
Yeah,
like, that would not happen in real life ever.
Yeah, every one of these movies has some kind of, like, ridiculous either car chase or foot chase. And in this one, like,
a combination of the two.
Yeah. You know, basically the city is going to pay the ransom for the kids. And Harry's like, no, I'd be like, you already tried that once and it got a girl killed. I'm not doing that. And goes rogue. And basically, like, you know, he's waiting for the guy on a bridge. And when the bus goes on the bridge, he jumps off on the bus. The bus crashes and him and Scorpio getting this, you know, long foot chase through a rock mine, rock quarry or something. And, you know, chases him to a lake and gives him the whole 44 Magnum speech again, but this time Harry did only fire five shots.
So yeah, I don't know. You know, there was some of the antics of the time. I'm just like, really, that was a bit over the top. Like,
and that's the other thing in the Dirty Harry formula is you end it with an epic helicopter shot and just like, you know, fade out into the distance. They do that shot in every single movie. Oh, it's over with. Let's just pan way out.
I mean, that was the thing at the time. I mean, dude, to make your images pan and everything, that was groundbreaking technology for the 70s, Joe. Damn. Could you imagine trying to be in video production and not being able to pan and all?
Yeah, now it'd be a drone shot, but back then you actually had to have a helicopter or a crane. But then, like I said, that it, you know, they made it for $4 million. It made like nearly $36 million. So it was
highly
successful for the 70s. And that brings us to the second of the Harry films, Magnum Force.
Yeah, once again, this stars Clint Eastwood as Harry Callahan. Go figure.
Yeah, and this one's, you know, a little bit closer to that whole Punisher storyline. This one's about real rogue cops that are killing suspects that supposedly, you know, that, you know, if the court can't put them away, these guys will.
Yeah, this is also the longest of the Dirty Harry films as well.
Yep, directed by Ted Post, and it was like a little over 2 hours long.
But, I mean, let's see here. So, I mean, this is another, you know, I mean, you know, $39 million, you know, almost $40 million.
Yeah. Don't know what the budget was on this one, but yeah, again, you know, someone's going around killing people who get away, and they have to put Harry on the case once they figure out that it's, oh, there's a patent to these. There's like all these random bad guys have gotten killed, but it looks like they're all being killed by the same gun or same type of gun.
Yeah. And, you know, this one was, you know, rather interesting because here, you know, the bad guys per se are, you know, actually traffic cops. Spoiler alert.
four motorcycle cops carrying 357 Colt Pythons. If you you like watching The Walking Dead, that's the gun of choice of Rick Grimes.
But you know, it was always interesting. You know, the killings would take place or whatever, and you know, one of the four cops was always there on scene within a matter of seconds, and like nobody caught on to that pattern. Like really, like
it went until they killed they killed a pimp at one point.
Yes.
And Harry noticed the guy had like his license out and like a $100 bill wrapped around his license like he was trying to offer somebody a bribe. That's when he kind of starts thinking, maybe this is a cop doing all these things.
Yeah. I don't know. Was that a pink Cadillac? Like, what?
I think it was. Cadillac or Lincoln one, but yeah, it was like a customized.
Dude, that thing was just like straight up. I was like, damn.
Yeah, this pimp had killed one of his ladies. And
I mean, she was holding out, though.
Yeah.
If you got a pimp, don't hold out. Like, just go ahead and get out of that environment, but don't hold out.
Oh yeah, and the catchphrase of this movie, again, when Harry goes to lunch, this time with his new partner, Early Smith, played by Felton Perry, they go to get a burger at the airport, and lo and behold, a plane gets hijacked, and Harry's the only cop on the scene. So he goes onto the plane dressed as a pilot and guns down all the bad dudes on the plane.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you know, they're trying to get the plane off the ground and everything else. And, you know, like all the co-pilots are looking at Harry like, do you even know how to fly? He's like, well, to be honest, no, I don't. Starts blowing people away.
Yeah. Like, oh, too.
Yeah, that scene where like the guy in the plane like stands up and, you know, Harry's like, duck. It just blows like right through, you know, that
through
little
the wall,
dividing
and
wall.
Hits the guy in the head.
That's why you carry a .44.
Exactly. Yeah. And the catchphrase of this movie is, man's got to know his limitations. Which I think is cool because his lieutenant doesn't like him. And he's like, I've been a cop longer than you have, Harry. And I've never had to draw my gun. And I'm proud of that. And he's like, well, little lieutenant, you're a good man. And a good man knows his limitations.
Like, as badass as the phrases can be directed at a perp, used in a different context, just shows you the type of smartass that, you know, Harry really is.
Yeah. Oh, you know, and the four rogue cops, Phil Sweets, played by a young Tim Matheson, John Davis, David Soul, and Red, I believe it was the other guy's name. But yeah, they were pretty bad at, you know, for being the rogue cops. You know, Harry, like, he wants to recruit them at first, you know, because they're like, he runs into them at the pistol range, and these guys are pretty badass, like ex-Army Rangers and Special Forces dudes that are now rogue cops.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, they're on, you know, and even Harry brings up this point. Like, you've got your, you know, four best guns doing traffic detail. Like, where does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And I like the, introduced one of his friends who's like, basically, his wife left him. He's like an alcoholic now, kind of suicidal. And at first he thinks, yeah, and he's also a motorcycle cop. So, yeah, Harry pretty much assumes it's him until one of these guys screws up and, you know, ends up killing him because he accidentally walk in on
he basically steps out of the door and, you know, witnesses what happened and basically takes the, I think it was a bullet to the head in that one.
Yeah, and then that's kind of where, Frank DiGiorgio again, who happened to be on the surveillance detail watching this mobster that got gunned down, he's like, I can't explain it. This kid was, like, I was across the street and this kid was on scene before me. Like, this, there's something weird about this. And that's when Harry kind of starts
putting two and two together,
suspecting him. And then he has this whole cool thing because there's like an annual police shootout competition, and one of the rookies beats him, and you're pretty sure like Harry let him win because he's been like the champion every year, and then he's like, let me try your gun, and then purposely misses and hits the wall. That way you can go dig a slug out of it and compare it to the ballistics of the the bullets from the earlier murders.
But this film also gave us a great quote, this time by a female character. So, when Callahan, is basically going into his apartment, bumps into a girl named Sunny. I think that was Adele.
Yeah, I don't have that name.
But anyway, she's basically like, what does a girl got to do to go to bed with you or something? And, Harry replies like,
try knocking on the door.
I was like,
pimp.
is that what it takes? Like,
hell yeah.
I guess you don't know. I guess you got to have that certain persona and women just, swoon all over you or something. Has not been my experience in life.
Yeah, Harry's doing some pimping in this movie. I mean, he goes to see his his old buddy's wife to find out, when he starts suspecting him of the killing, and she ends up hitting on him.
Can I ask you something serious? Why have you never made a pass at me? Like, I don't know, maybe you got 14 screaming kids running around. And I think she even makes references to cockblock, I didn't even realize that term was that old. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of awkward.
Then
it turns out his, captain that won't pull the gun is the one leading these crew of killers, and tricks Harry and tries to, take him out, but of course Harry gets away, and they had put a bomb in his mailbox, which he found. So he leaves the bomb in the car, and the captain steals his car and tries to drive off, and the car blows up. And again, got no limitation. And of course, his partner dies.
Is weird because the captain knows the bomb is there.
But he doesn't know that it's turned on. Like, right before the captain shows back up, Harry reactivates the bomb.
I mean, I would think that, potential explosive device. Yeah, let's just go ahead and, you get in an auto accident. Turned off or not, you're just asking for failure. You deserve to die. You're stupid. Instead of rule number one, cardio, it should be make sure there's no bombs in your car, activated or not.
The car chase, it's like motorcycles versus a old police car. And then they get into driving motorcycles through decommissioned aircraft carriers that are about to be torn apart and jumping from aircraft carrier to aircraft carrier. I was like, which was pretty badass.
It was badass.
And never play chicken with a motorcycle, because you're on a motorcycle, you're going to lose. Those guys are chasing Harry, he finally just runs one of them over.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, some of the car chases and foot chases were just, over the top, unrealistic. If you're on a motorcycle and I've got a car, I'm taking you out, done. Oh,
I mean, one of the worst ones is the next movie, The Enforcer from 1976, directed by James Fargo. And also introducing Tyne Daly, who you may know as another famous TV cop from Cagney and Lacey later on. But yeah, this one, Harry's partnered up with DiGiorgio and they end up getting into... this is the only one that it strays from the formula, so there's not really a catchphrase from this movie, but there's still a lot of great one-liners.
I mean, I think in this film right here, this film was all about, basically sex appeal getting men. I mean, that's how it starts out. You know, you've got the, you know, scantily clad woman, like, just standing out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and two guys just happen like, oh, ma'am, you need a ride, and being all flirtatious, and what happens? You go to a remote area and you die.
Yeah. Because this one, the bad guy is a group of basically hippie terrorists, I guess.
I mean, you know, it is the, you know, People's Revolution Strike Force.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. You know, it is, I mean, domestic terrorism, I mean, it is a thing. I mean, I don't know. Like,
and of,
but it is the type of people that I would expect to see at a Woodstock festival, not like sporting AKs and building bombs. Yeah, because
they rob like a weapons depot and steal like law rockets.
But they had bandanas, so I guess that's what adds the badass factor is the bandana.
But yeah, this is probably one of the funniest reasons for Harry to get suspended. They come up on a robbery that's they've got a whole bunch of hostages in a liquor store, and Harry goes in to try to talk them out, and they, you know, spit in his face and call him a pig and be like, we want a car with a police radio in it. And he's like, okay. So he goes back out to his car, gets in his car, and he's like, they wanted a car with a police radio, and drives it right through the front of the store and like shoots everybody.
And I mean, that's always the big thing. Like, the other underlying factor is the insurance bill or the insurance claim getting sent to the precinct and, you know, being, that was $14 million.
Oh, yeah. And that's, and like I said, it's the captain's always an asshole. And that's probably when they're like, oh, no, you're off of homicide. You're going to go work personnel. It's like, what? Personnel's for assholes. He's like, I was in personnel for 10 years. Like, yeah.
And you're an asshole. Slams the door. I'm out.
So yeah, that's where we meet his new partner, Kate Moore, because she's when Harry's sent to basically give the promotion exams and stuff, and they're wanting to, like, basically you have to promote a woman, so he's like having to do the interview and stuff, and it's basically just pissing everybody off. And he's like, all right, we got to do a hypothetical scenario here.
They're trying to be politically correct, and Harry's just not having any of that shit. Like,
it's funny because she has, like, she's going for a detective's position, and she's had zero road experience. She's basically been like an office clerk this whole time, and Harry kind of finds that offensive. But later in the movie, she actually has some good qualities, and he kind of learns, like, all right, she's smart. She can be trained to be a good cop, you know, like... Yeah, I'll give her a pass, but I love it in the exam. He's like, all right, we're supposed to do a hypothetical scenario. What happens if you know, I'm walking down the street and they have basically a civilian from the mayor's office there overseeing everything, and she propositions me for $5, she'll come back. I can come back to her house and she'll do something freaky with a donkey or something like that. He's like, and they're like, Harry. He's like, hey, I just want to know if anyone here knows what crime was committed besides cruelty to animals.
And the freaking lady sitting at the end of the table is just stewing, like.
Yeah. And what's funny is, you know, the Kate Moore actually knew what laws were being broken in that scenario.
But I mean, I think this is the film here that kind of really introduced that buddy cop aspect. You know, like they started out on rough grounds, but, you know, Harry definitely warms up to her and everything of that nature. And it was always weird because, like, I always felt like she was wearing high heels. Like,
and carrying,
you know,
a purse.
You know, he asked her in that interview, you know, how quick did you do, you know, the mile or whatever, or the... You know, 1,000.
Yeah, the 100-yard.
The 100-yard or whatever the case is. And this film is all about foot chases.
Because, yeah. Like I said, after these terrorists start blowing up stuff and demanded money from the city, they're like, and they, when they're stealing the weapons, they end up killing Frank and Harry. And he's like, I think it, one of the guys is somebody that we investigated before. So, like, they're like, all right, Harry, you're back in. And, homicide, but you got to take the new girl as your partner, which he's not happy about. And while they're doing like an autopsy, like they blow up something next door, and he gets in a foot chase with one of these guys, and it's probably the longest. Like, I would have had a heart attack like 5 minutes. There's like a 20-minute foot chase.
I would have been dead.
I mean, at one point, the guy trips and falls through a skylight into a porn set. Because there was always random nakedness in these Dirty Harry. Because it was the 70s. But yeah, they fall through the window into a porn set, and then the chase continues. And the guy who just... This is like the dumb rookie move. The guy who just blew up a building drops a briefcase and a dumpster, and Harry's new partner picks up the briefcase and is like chasing them with this briefcase and has no idea that it's probably full of explosives. This guy just blew up something. You may want to check what's in that back.
Not important. The important thing is to try to keep up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I do think it's funny when they go to the range and you know, there's a demonstration of the law rocket. Yes. And, you know, like the entire time, like Harry's partner, she's like standing directly behind it, like looking down the tube, and you know, the range officer goes to fire the weapon and he like grabs her and pulls her away, and like she has this look on her face like, what the fuck are you doing, until like all the brush and everything behind her is like on fire and burning, like, yeah, bitch, that's about to be your head.
Yeah, and then basically the captain just is like, oh no, this isn't these because Harry's like, no, this has got something to do with prostitution. But he's like, no, it's black militants. It's got to be. So they end up like arresting this group that has nothing whatsoever to do with it. And then they try to give Harry.
In fact, isn't that the group that Harry made a deal with?
Yeah. Like,
what's his name?
Mustafa.
Mustafa, yeah.
Big Mustafa.
Which was weird because it said Mustafa, and then I'm thinking Mufasa from Lion King. Was there some kind of tie-in?
Maybe. But yeah, it's like, you know, they bust this whole crew for nothing and have no evidence on them. But, you know, they're convinced that they're the ones. So they try to kind of throw Harry under the bus. Like, oh, no, we need to this is all Harry's idea. Let's give him like a medal for it. So, he, you know, the mayor drags him into the office. And they're going to give him and his partner a commendation. And he's like, we didn't do anything. This is like a bullshit arrest. These people shouldn't have been arrested. And he's like, one of the other cool lines is like, it's like, if y'all want to jerk these people off, go ahead, but don't use me to do it.
And then, you know, they make their exit, and the mayor's standing there, and, you know, he's got this dumb kind of look, like, and, you know, his, you know, I guess, you know.
It's like the mayor's aide or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, what are we going to do now? I'm like, I guess we're going to go jerk these people off.
But then, of course, you know, the mayor gets kidnapped by these terrorist guys, and Harry, who's, you know, already told the captain to shove the badge up his ass. Yeah, he goes.
Oh, yeah, the 7-point suppository. Yeah.
That so what do you mean by that? I mean, shove it up your ass.
That was another great line from this film.
Oh, but yeah, then he has to go rogue and save the mayor. And of course, he's got a partner. Partner's going to get killed just as she was starting to become a good cop. It doesn't pay to be Harry's partner.
No, absolutely not. So I don't know, you know, that this film, I mean, it just had, I don't know. I really kind of liked the dynamic, but it didn't fit the mold of a lot of the other films. But
and then that brings us to the only Dirty Harry movie actually directed by Clint Eastwood himself, Sudden Impact from 1983.
There were quite a few sudden impacts in this film, too.
You can definitely tell that's the 80s, too, because it's like the theme song is like,
oh, yeah, dude.
It's synthesizer heavy.
80, yes. But,
yeah, this one, it's back to that Dirty Harry formula. You can see where it hits all the points. There is the quintessential scene that shows what a badass he is and introduce the catchphrase of the movie, where it's
go ahead, make my day.
Yeah, which is probably one of the most famous of the Dirty Harry lines, where he basically stops for coffee and the cafe he's in is getting robbed and he doesn't notice. He's just there reading the paper, getting the coffee, and they're pouring like a half a bottle of sugar into his coffee. So when he turns around to walk out and leave, he sips it and he's like, the hell is this stuff? And then he comes back in and he's like, they're like, what are you doing?
Well, I think one of the key giveaways is he exits the diner, and immediately upon his exit, the sign slipped to closed.
Yeah.
And he kind of does a take back and says, huh, that's odd. And then I think that in combination with the psychic coffee.
Yeah, because at that point, because like earlier in the movie, they had thrown out one of his cases because they're like, oh, no, you didn't have any... you know, any kind of evidence and stuff. You just happen to be right, you know, and you can't be, you know, psychic is not probable cause and stuff. So he's like, so after he kills all these guys, you know, you need to ask the DA if coffee is considered psychic, because like, that's how he knew what was going on, is because his coffee was bad. And when he comes back in, the guys have like, are in the midst of robbing the place, and he's like standing there like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I've been coming here for 10 years to get black coffee, and she serves me this thing full of sugar. I came back to complain, but I can't, we can't let you boys do what you're going to do. And like, Who's we? He's like, me, Smith, and Wesson. Yes. Shoots everybody except for one guy who's holding a hostage, and he's just pointing the gun at him. He's like, go ahead, make my day.
Yeah, and there was another catchphrase used, and it was an Italian phrase.
The Italian version of the movie, apparently there's not a translation for go ahead and make my day, and it was like something like, go ahead, let me kill you, which they used for the title of this movie in its Italian release.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting little tidbit there. But, you know, I mean, just to show you the success here. So this film was shot, made on a $22 million budget and made $67 million, a little over $67.5 million at the box office. I mean.
Even though it fits that Dirty Harry formula to a T, you can tell this is directed by Clint Eastwood because there's all these, like, sweeping camera shots and like epic landscape photos that is like it looked visually different than all the previous like Harry movies.
Yes,
it was like visually more complex. Yeah, and basically the story of this movie is a girl and her sister are violently like pretty much gang raped, and it's 10 years later. She happens to see. She's now an artist. Her sister is like catatonic in a mental ward. And she happened to see one of the guys that raped her and basically seduced him and double taps him, shoots him in the nuts and the head.
Not in a good way, yeah. Like.
And so Harry's investigating that murder, and they realize that this guy's from a small town outside of San Francisco. And they basically, Harry basically, again, like, you know, mafia guys get away. Well, he goes in and like basically pisses off a mafia guy enough till he has a heart attack. So now the mafia blames him for killing this guy.
Which is weird too, because that is, dude, that is like the ultimate bluff. Like, so what if I knew, you know, you had a gay relationship or blah blah blah, and or you know,
yeah, some he, kind he of basically said there was like a witness that to like one of his crimes or something,
and wrote a letter.
Yeah,
and he's got pulls this, out a letter
that's like completely blank. It's just like empty papers. But it gives this guy a heart attack, so the mafia is like trying to kill him, and they're like, "Harry, we can't take you off the because you're like basically like a hero now for busting this guy, but you need to get out of town so people don't get like killed around you. So we're gonna send you to get you know background information on this guy that got murdered in this small town." And turns out like once he gets there, more people are dying, and it's the same like MO. So he's like you know kind of going this like cat and mouse trying to figure out who's killing these dirt bags. And it's kind of it's funny because it's you can see what he's trying to do. He's trying to do something different and it be a you know crime you know whodunit type mystery. But at the same time, it's a Dirty Harry movie, so there has to be action sequences. So they have that whole thing about the mafia trying to get him. So randomly, assassins just show up and try to kill him.
Yes.
It's completely has nothing to do with the main storyline. But like, all right, we got to have like an action sequence every 30 minutes or so. So we're just gonna have mafia hitmen show up to kill you while you're trying to investigate this murder.
I don't know. This film was rather interesting because I guess for all intent and purposes, you could. I mean, I would almost consider Dirty Harry a vigilante of sorts because, yeah. I mean, he is the law, but he operates outside of the procedural confines and, you know, the
procedural confines.
Yeah.
Good pull.
The girl, the artist, you know, she's the one going around actually committing
Jennifer
the murders.
Spencer,
and,
played by Sandra Locke.
You know, once that you understand why she's committing the murders and everything, you know.
Yeah, you're kind of rooting for her.
Yeah, you're like, hey, you know what? Vengeance is well served here.
Yeah, and this also, you know, when they tell Harry he has to take a vacation and go out of town, he... And you know, after he gets attacked by dudes in a bulletproof limo, he's like, I need a bigger gun. And that's when he shows off the .44 Auto Mag, which basically this was the Desert Eagle before there was a Desert Eagle.
Super impressive. Oh
yeah, it was basically designed to give .44 caliber power to a semi-automatic gun. And it's a monster of a handgun, which they only made like 3,000 of these things. Like pretty much the company went out of business like as soon as they started making these. So they're like stupid expensive now. If you try to find one out, it's like a $4,000 gun. When it was like maybe $300 back in the 70s.
Yeah, it's just freaking super impressive. I was like, he opens the case, and I'm like, oh. Yeah, and I thought Harry was kind of done for, too. Like, he's basically in a secluded area, like out in the woods, and has like a single target set up. And you see this guy like moping through the woods, ducking behind trees with a shotgun in tow, and, you know, basically walks up behind Harry. And, you know, Harry usually is pretty good about, I don't know, I guess he's just got really good intuition because, you know, ninjas sneak up on him or something. And like instantly he knows, and oh, there's a .45 pressed against your forehead. Like,
yeah, but it turned out it was just his partner.
Yes.
And you notice the mistake in that scene? He's wearing the shoulder holster he's wearing when he's hanging up the targets is different than the one he's wearing when his partner walks up on him.
I did not notice
the shoulder holster changed. Like it's got three straps at the beginning, and then when he gets to shooting, it's got two straps.
You paid way too much attention.
I like guns. What can I say?
Apparently, you like shoulder holsters. But... yeah, I don't know. This one was rather interesting. You know, the whole sudden impact on a unicorn.
Yeah. Because, yeah, basically, you know, as this girl's gone around killing the people that had raped her, eventually, like, the leader of that gang comes back to town and starts, you know, ends up killing, like, the police chief and capturing her, and they're going to, you know, rape her one more time before they kill her, and they've... basically, they've, you know, killed Harry's partner because, of course, you know, he shows up to, you know, he's like to tell Harry that he can, you come back to town, everything's good, and they're waiting in the hotel room to kill Harry.
Yeah.
And they end up slitting his throat and stabbing his dog.
Damn it. Poor Meathead.
Yeah.
Dude, and Meathead is an asshole of a dog, too.
Yeah. But they beat the shit out of Harry and throw him, like, into the ocean, and you know, he drops his classic .44, so he goes back to his hotel room, finds his partner killed, so he's like, time to kick some ass, and opens up the .44 auto mag.
Yeah, that scene there almost is, you know, once again, I'm going to flash back to the Punisher, and, you know, where, like, you just see him, and he opens up his armory, and it's just a plethora of guns and toys, and you're just like, ooh, I need one of those times seven.
And that's the thing, and, like, Harry's kind of, because he kind of hooks up with the girl, and he notices... he figures out that she's the killer because he starts to pick up little things. He sees her car and realizes he saw that car at one of the scenes.
Yeah,
and he goes back and finds the body.
Plates
and he's like,
ran and
he's
finds-
like, oh shit, this, she's the one that's killed him. So when he kind of goes back, you know, they're, and she is kind of a badass herself because, like I said, even though they've got her and they're planning to do stuff to her, she fights them off for like a long time,
yeah,
like running around the little, whatever.
It's like a little amusement
boardwalk
park or
amusement
something.
Park.
Yeah.
But then when they finally get a hold of her and they're about to kill her, like, you know, they all stop. They're like, what's that? And it's probably the most badass reveal because you just see Harry at the end of the boardwalk and he's backlit. So he's just a like black silhouette and you see that giant freaking hand cannon. And he just like doesn't say anything. He just like walks up and like caps two of them.
But see, I've got qualms with that scene just because you're standing there with a automatic rifle. You see Harry down at the end of the pier, like... at that point, you should not be questioning what is it. You should be opening fire. Like, don't wait on the guy to, like, walk.
This was directed by Clint. Like, it had a very Western feel in that scene. Because they all kind of, like, start getting space. Like, there's about to be a draw, man. It's like some outlaw Josie Wells stuff. When he just kind of creeps up slowly and then, like, caps everybody because he's pissed off. And then, of course, again, the guy runs from, gets on top of a roller coaster, and he's got the girl hostage. And he's like, you know, let her go. And he's like, I ain't letting her go. And he's like, go ahead. Make my day. And she, like, you know, punches him or whatever and gets away and gets a clean shot for Harry. So he blows him off the top of the roller coaster, falls through the merry-go-round, and gets impaled by a unicorn.
Probably one of the most epic death scenes. Like...
and what's cool is because, like, since they had captured her, they had taken the gun that she had been using to kill all these guys. So when they search his body, they found the gun in his pants, and Harry knows at this point that she's the killer, or at least he's suspected. And they're like, oh, yo, Inspector Callahan, we found this .38 pistol. And he's like, yeah, y'all should, you know, run ballistics on that. I bet it's going to match the other murders. You know, I think we found our man. Just kind of looks at her, and she's like, yeah, let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, and, you know, and he's alluding the entire time, like, you know, so you think this is over, right? And he's like, I think it's over, and looks at her, and like, yeah, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of like, all right, I understand what you did. I don't like it, but yeah, like it's justified. I'm going to let you go. These guys stabbed my dog and killed my partner, so yeah.
In addition to what they did to you.
Yeah.
So up next, we have the Deadpool, not to be confused by Deadpool with the red costume.
Yeah, 1988, the last of the Dirty Harry movies, directed by Buddy Van Horn.
I got to say, man, this one... Excuse me, my mouth is dry.
very 80s. Like, even, like, the last theme song was 80s. This one was very 80s.
But this one here, like, it had, like, I mean, you know, the whole filming of the movie Hotel Satan, like, you know, and then you see, you know, Guns N' Roses at some point and stuff. Like, you know, it had very much, like, the 80s, like, metal vibe. Like, this was the first,
kind of big budget Dirty Harry movie. I mean, it cost 31 mil to make. They only made 37 on it, but like, so this is probably had the most production value of any of them, because I mean, it had Liam Neeson in it as director Swan, who was basically the guy, like a low budget horror movie director trying to film this movie, and someone is killing off people around them because basically they're playing a game called the Deadpool. And people actually literally bet on this stuff on the internet, that you know, you make a list of celebrities you think are going to die in like in a year. And, you know, they find out this list, and basically everyone who's on this director's list is getting killed. And Harry is also on the list. But the first person to die is the star of his movie, who is Jim Carrey doing his best Axl Rose impression.
Yeah, playing Johnny Square, right?
Yeah, Johnny Square. You know, he supposedly ODs, but it's, yeah, somebody forces him to OD. But yeah, since they're using Guns N' Roses music as Johnny Square's music, you get the weirdest Jim Carrey lip-syncing to Welcome to the Jungle.
Yes.
And all of Guns N' Roses are in this movie. There's a funeral scene for Johnny Square, and Guns N' Roses is there as his band. And there's like another scene, like it's supposed to be like a nightmare scene or something in the movie, where a guy's supposed to get shot with a big-ass harpoon gun, and Slash is the one firing. And the crew of the pirate ship is Guns N' Roses, and Slash is firing the giant spear gun.
Yes, that was awesome. Yeah, I don't know, man. I really did. I think I enjoyed this film. You know, I guess a lot of it just had to do with the music and the darker aspects, because you didn't get... Like, the rest of the films felt very Western.
Yeah.
This one, you know, felt like... It could almost be a, which I don't know. I think part of it just, I'm a fan of cheesy B horror films and stuff. So I'm like, I want to see Hotel Satan.
Yeah. And the thing, and the feel of this movie is so much different, because this one they introduced Harry's new partner, Al Kwan, played by Evan Kim, who's like a badass martial artist. And this is like one of the only Dirty Harry movies where his partner doesn't get killed. I mean, he does get, you know, injured, but he doesn't die. And it kind of, because like, all right, up until this point, like I said, the formula for a cop movie was the lone hero, and his partner was kind of disposable. But 1986, we get Lethal Weapon, and the whole buddy cop genre gets born. So I think they tried to make this one more of a buddy cop film. It's like I said, the partner had a lot more dialogue and you know, and lines in the movie than previous partners have.
Yeah, and you know, there's actually a little bit of badassdom too, where, you know, like when they're in Chinatown and, you know, you see his partner just, you know, kung fuing. Like, I was like, oh shit, are we going to get like a kung fu movie, like or something? Like, up until, you know, I watched the film, I hadn't seen the Deadpool before, so everything was new to me. And he's like, damn, partnering with a Chinese-American was, you know, a good idea.
Yeah, because this is the only movie where, like, the department kind of likes Harry, because they're like, he busts this mafia guy who, becomes famous all of a sudden. Like, he's on the cover of a magazine, all these reporters are wanting to do interviews for him, and, like, the public relations officer keeps like, oh, yeah, this would be good, you know, you should have a, you know, Chinese-American... Our Japanese American partner. It'll be good for the image of the instead of like the usual, like, you know, you're fired, Harry, because he's finally like, because there's one part like he's on a date with this reporter because he basically smashes her camera because like she's getting in the face of a murder of the wife of a murder victim, and they're like, all right, we could sue you, but instead you need to take me out on a date because I want to try to get an interview with Harry. And these two guys like walk up on him, and Harry thinks it's like people fixing to try to kill him. So the guy reaches in his jacket for a pen, and Harry pulls a gun on him. And they're like, "Oh no, no, we just wanted your autograph. Yeah, I mean, he's more cops like you. You're can we buy you a beer?" And then when he walks off, the guy that he pulled the gun is like, "I gotta change my pants.
Should have wore the brown pants." Yeah, that was awesome. And it, and kind of the whole dynamic, you know, his partner kind of, you know, gets injured, so he takes a back burner. So it's just him and the, basically Harry and the reporter. And, you know, they make a very good dynamic. Like, you think it's just the helpless damsel in distress or whatever, but, you know, I don't know. Like I said earlier, yeah, I really
Patricia
enjoyed
Clarkson,
this film.
Playing, I think it was like something Walker was her name, but yeah, it was kind of cool. And I like the part because, like I said, these assassins keep trying to kill Harry, and he's on. That's one of the reasons why he got put on the Deadpool list, because they're like, yeah, he's eventually going to get killed. So he goes to the prison to see the mafia boss that he arrested, and he's like, picks the biggest, meanest guy in the prison. He's like, "I'll give you a carton of cigarettes. You just have to go with me and stand where I tell you to." He's like, "Okay." So the guy's like looking in the corner, looking all mean, and he goes over to him. He's
flexing
like,
"Flexing his muscles and
yeah."
Everything.
And he's like, "You know, I'm going to give you a job. You're now the postman. See, I told a Butch over there that I'm going to stop in and check on his mom and send him a letter like once a week telling him how his mom is. Now, if that letter doesn't get delivered, I told him to come see you because you're the mailman. So if anything happens to me and he doesn't get his letters, he's going to be very pissed off."
Well, and I like when he goes to exit the room and it's like, yeah, what did you say? And he's like, well, he hands him the carton of cigarettes, and he's like, "See that asshole over there?" Yeah.
He says cigarettes cause cancer, and anyone who's dumb enough to smoke as much as you do is like a real asshole. And then the guy's like, which is funny because later on, Harry's starting to get followed by these mafia guys, and he assumes someone's trying to kill him. So he walks down an alley, and like the guys show up, and he big scramble, and they're like, "No, no, wait, we're your bodyguards." Like, what? He's like, "Yeah,
we're hired to protect."
Yeah.
You.
He's like, "Yeah, our boss said we don't want anything to happen to you, so he sent us to like protect you."
Which is weird. Like, this film here, like,
I can't wait for those guys to show up later on and like actually save Harry at some point.
Well, I mean, I'm they introduced the bodyguards or everything. Well, then we get that epic car chase montage where it's the fucking RC car, you know, chasing Harry all through freaking.
Yeah, because the killer basically gets a pretty sweet little RC car and loads it full of explosive. That's how he takes out one of his victims, because basically he hates Swan and is trying to make it look like he's the killer by killing off everybody on his Deadpool list, so he'll go to jail.
And it's funny because he kills them off in scenes depicted by Swan's horror movies.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much. Yeah, then there's like the whole weird car chase between Harry and an RC car.
And you're just like, and I gotta say, man, because it's not just somebody standing on the road, you know, controlling an RC car. No, this RC car is being controlled as a car is weaving in and out of traffic, you know.
I'm pretty sure they don't work that way. I mean, it takes two hands usually to control an RC car, but yeah, he's chasing Harry, who's being chased by the car.
Like, and I'm like, you know, that's another one. Like, a physical car is going to outrun an RC car. Like, that, or, you know what, Harry, you got guns. Like, shoot the fucker.
I can't wait for him to, like, just pull over and, like, you know, stick his .44 out the window and shoot the RC car.
But instead, no, we get like 10 minutes of this.
This weird car chase. Yeah, and eventually the real killer kidnaps the reporter, and Harry has to go to save her, and he ends up losing his gun and is getting chased by the killer with his gun. And this movie doesn't have a real catchphrase, but he does have a badass line, because this guy's chasing Harry, shooting him, and he definitely shoots the full six shots. But they get to the end of he chases him kind of onto the movie set, and he gets to the end where, Harry walks out of the smoke, and he's carrying the giant spear gun.
Yes.
And he's like, "You're out of shots." You know what that also means? You're shit out of luck, and shoots him with the spear gun.
Well, I like that, you know, once everybody arrives and they're like, "Where's Rourke?" or whatever his name is. Like, "Oh, he's just hanging out back." Like, that is a fucking awesome closing.
And then end with an epic crane shot. As all Dirty Harry movies do. So as we kind of wrap up, what's your final thoughts on the Macanudo here?
The Macanudo, it grew on me. I started picking up the woody oakiness. It kind of stayed throughout the smoke, but then I also started picking up on a little bit of spice, and then it kind of graduated from what I would say maybe a medium to medium full graduated to more of a mild medium as, you know, the cigar continued. So it was, you know,
yeah, it builds up and then kind of eased off toward the end.
I think this would be, you know, a great start your day cigar because it starts off, you know, relatively medium and then kind of goes up medium full and then back to medium. So it's not just a powerhouse all the way through. So, you know, I mean, it's for the price point and everything that we paid for this cigar, I mean, this could be a daily smoke.
Yeah. And, yeah, like I said, near like $740, something like that. Yeah, it's a decent price point, and like I said, it's stronger than the normal Macanudos that I've had. So it's like I said, yeah, it's a good everyday smoke. If you're not into the strong stuff like we are, it's a good middle of the road stick.
And this got complexity, so I didn't feel bored with the cigar, and that's kind of one of the things is. You know, it's not always about strength. It's about having a complexity and about keeping my taste buds and everything else entertained so I don't just be like, all right, I'm bearing with this thing for, you know, an hour and a half or whatever the case is. You know, so I got to say, it was decent enough. I mean, it was well-constructed, didn't have any issues with draw or, you know, construction. So, you know, at a... You know, right around a $7.50 price tag, why the hell not?
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
It's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's Beer 30. So what are we drinking today, Brett?
Oh, this week we're drinking...
Looks like motor oil.
Yeah, it's black and with the tan head, definitely looks like used motor oil. But this is actually Coastal Empire Dawn Patrol Imperial Stout.
Another beer, local beer I had before. This one's out of Savannah, the Coastal Empire Beer Co.
Yeah, and this is a breakfast stout with quite a few twists that I have not seen before in a breakfast stout.
Yeah, it's an imperial stout aged for 4 weeks on coffee, raisins, serrano peppers, ancho peppers, cumin, allspice, nutmeg, and cinnamon.
Yeah, like I was expecting this to be a lot like some of the Christmas stouts or, you know, some of the, what was the graham cracker stout?
Big Shanty. It kind of has that graham crackery smell to it with the cinnamon and the nutmeg.
I mean, as far as the smell goes, I get raisins, I get the nutmeg, and I get a hint of chocolate. The taste is what is tripping me out because I am actually tasting all of those flavors in this beer. So, like, you know, the most prominent one is probably the raisin and then the heat from the peppers, which is subtle.
Pepper burn on the back end, which is kind of weird. I mean, if you're calling it a breakfast stout, it kind of tastes like somebody threw a nice Western omelet at my beer, you know, because I always like go hot on the peppers on my breakfast omelets.
I don't know. See, I'm thinking more of a raisin pancake with some, you know, a hint of
some Cholula sauce on it.
Yeah, you know, just and the spice is subtle. Like, I mean, it's not like in your face. Yeah, like,
it's not like that sriracha stout. We yeah, had. It's just very like just kind of spicy on the back end, so, much like the cigar was.
Does that mean our back ends are going to be spicy later?
Maybe. I did have that jalapeno burger earlier.
But I mean, it's complex. It's good. Like, this is a beer that I could, I mean, they're called breakfast stouts. Like, I mean, I could see myself having this at breakfast time. Like,
I mean, that's the secret. You can, you know, if you drink at breakfast, you may be an alcoholic unless you drink breakfast drinks. That means you got to drink Bloody Marys,
mimosas?
Screwdrivers, mimosas, and breakfast stouts.
But, I mean, you know, this with a plate of omelets or some pancakes yeah. or, you know, something of that effect. Like, I mean, like, I'm almost tempted to, like, go to the Waffle House and get, like, an all-star combo meal or something and bring it back just to pair with the beer and be like, all of this stuff that I'm ingesting, I am also drinking.
When you're like me on the weekends, you don't wake up till noon. I mean, it's all right to start drinking.
There we go.
Technically, it is breakfast, but most people, it's lunch. But
it's my first meal of the day.
Exactly.
Make it hearty. But yeah, this beer comes in at about a 10% ABV. You know, about a 90 on the international bittering unit. So it's not hoppy. It's not bitter. It's weird because it is so complex, but you get all of those tastes. Like, normally there's prominence, and it's hard for me to pick up on all of the individual ingredients. But on this beer, I actually do, and I think that's what it's a freak out for my taste buds because there's so much going on.
Yeah, it's definitely not one thing. It is very complex, is the word.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, as far as an untapped you know, scale of 1 to 5 goes, I mean, I'm probably at about a 4 on this beer.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you there.
You know, I've been kind of poking around the web just to get other people's feedback. Excuse me. And
it's getting some good rating. And this did win a 2014 Georgia Beer Festival bronze medal for the herb spice beer category.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, I think they're onto something. This is the first beer by Coastal Empire Beer Company that I've had. So I'd be curious to check, see what they got in their lineup and what we can get our hands on, because this is the first time I've seen this beer.
Yeah, that's for my car. I picked it up at Dawson Fine Wine, and they had a couple they had there. Also, it's a collaboration beer they did with Burnt Hickory called March to the Sea. They also had that one. And they got a few regular, you know, these are their seasonal stuff, and they have a few regular production runs. They also have a, I think it's like a praline amber ale. That sounds interesting. And, of course, you know, Savannah Brown. I think everyone has a nice brown ale in Georgia. But, yeah, it's, like I said, yeah, 4 is probably a good rating for this.
Perfect. Any other thoughts, feedback?
Have another?
Yep. So we're going to kick back, enjoy the rest of our beer. So you folks stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back. It's time for some science. You ready to learn some shit, Brad?
Yeah, man. I'm ready to get my education on. What you got?
All right. You like Star Wars? Do you like bugs?
I mean, I do have arachnids, and I do like Star Wars, so yes.
All right. We're going to combine the two today because a newly discovered beetle, a new flightless beetle discovered in Papua New Guinea, has been named after Chewbacca.
Sweet. It has no fur.
Yeah, from the picture, it kind of looks like a tick, but it's got some, like a bunch of scales on its rear and its head, and they said it kind of reminded them of Chewbacca's fur.
I mean, it looks more like a dung beetle to me, I think. Like, I could just see this chilling, rolling some dung, or, you know, fighting stormtroopers. I mean, rolling them into a ball.
I mean, it kind of looks like a Star Wars alien, so I get where they get the inspiration. Yet, it only measures about a tenth of an inch long. It was part of seven new animals discovered in Bolivia. But yeah, its official scientific name is Trigonopteris chewbacca.
That is pretty awesome.
Yep. So yeah, Chewie has its own beetle now. Now if they can just find like another beetle, name it Han Solo.
Jeez.
Trigon Neptus Solous or something like that. Then you get Han and Chewie back together again. Until just... someone like you know pierces it with a lightsaber.
Nah, man, I still say like they're gonna team up and they're gonna roll stormtroopers in a ball because they're pretty dumb and you know like that's gonna take out the entire squadron.
And as long as we're talking about bathroom things, would you like to charge your cell phone with pee?
I suppose. I don't know. Like, does that involve me having to urinate on my phone and then hold it up to my ear? If so, probably not. Cause...
I mean, maybe eventually.
I'm going to need you to elaborate here.
Well, scientists have developed a power cell that is run... basically, it uses electric bacteria that is found in human waste, specifically urine, to generate power.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's basically they were trying to come up with ways to create affordable and renewable energy. So they've had kind of they're experimenting with a fuel cell that runs on urine. Basically, it gets electricity from like natural biological process that breaks down bacteria. Like I said, it's basically they call it electric bacteria, and it's a group of cells that basically eat and breathe electricity.
That is pretty sweet. So basically they do this by transferring electrons generated by the breaking down of organic compounds.
Pretty much. The co-author of the study, Mirella D. Lanzo, professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering at the University of Bath in in the United Kingdom. And yeah, the bath is normally where most of us pee.
I think that's why I prefer the shower. I think bathing in your own urine kind of defeats the purpose. Like, I understand, like, there's multiple gallons of water, so dilution comes into play, but still, like, I don't know, there's a lot of funk and a lot of gunk that could potentially go on in a bathtub that you're just like, oh yeah, let me clean myself with all of this.
Yeah, and basically they collected these electric bacteria from sewage at a water treatment plant in the UK. So, I mean, it's going to be very, if they perfect this process, very economical because, we've got to dispose of waste eventually anyway, and if we can kind of
that's just going to give us an excuse to drink more beer or something, so yeah. We urinate more frequently, so like yeah. Oh, I need to charge here, let me down another 32 ounces.
But yeah, so yeah if we can develop means of generating fuel and electricity from waste that's going to have to be treated eventually anyway, I mean, hell, your pee could actually be worth some money someday.
Sweet.
Instead of having to pay your sewage bills, like maybe your sewage bills pays you.
I mean, sweet. I can save on that FetLife subscription.
Anyway.
Quickly on to the next topic.
But yeah, this device is also carbon neutral, which means it doesn't produce any extra carbon dioxide or pollutants or anything. So not only is it going to be a very cost-effective means of generating energy, it's also not going to produce any... add any kind of pollutants to the environment.
Well, I mean, we got the green environmental movement. Maybe we can start the yellow environmental movement.
Yeah, right now it only generates about 2 watts per cubic meter of energy, which they say is about enough to charge a cell phone. So, like I said, if you make these things small enough, you can just stick one in your bathroom. Instead of having to carry a car charger, just pee in a little cube and charge your phone.
Sweet. Yeah, science.
Oh, and as long as we're talking about the future, let's talk about Elon Musk again. Our favorite German borderline, but I still haven't decided whether he's Tony Stark or a future Bond villain. But he is doing some exciting things.
But who's to say that in a distant future that Stark isn't a Bond villain? I mean...
Well, speaking of Stark...
There's been some ethical lines crossed.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Stark, We all know Elon Musk is behind the SpaceX program, you know, like the one of the first civilian space exploration companies, has hired famous comic, or not comic, superhero costume designer Jose Fernandez to design spacesuits for SpaceX program.
That is pretty awesome. So, you know, you could actually see the bat suit in space at some point, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, he has designed, like, the bat suit, the older Spider-Man costumes. He's even made some of the, like, the weird cyberpunk, Daft Punk helmets. Like I said, this guy is quite famous in the superhero movie community. So it's going to be interesting to see what he designs for Elon Musk's space suits.
No, that'll be awesome. Like, that's got me excited. Like, I mean, superheroes in space.
Speaking of space, another thing that SpaceX has been experimenting in is basically landing drone rockets. So, you know, because now one of the things that makes space travel so cost prohibitive is the rockets we are using are not recyclable. Like I said, we spend billions of dollars on a spacecraft that only gets used once. The rockets are always, you know, disposable. So they've been trying to do a thing where, you know, when they launch a rocket, the booster stages that normally you fall away to the ocean or burn up in the environment will actually come back to Earth and land on a drone-controlled barge. Their first couple attempts were not very successful, and it kind of crashed on impact. But they did a successful test, and they recently have done their fastest landing of a drone rocket on a barge, and completely successfully. It's the Falcon 9 rocket, and this landing was 3 times faster than any of their other landings. So, like I said, this rocket came in hot, but was able to deaccelerate and land perfectly on its barge. So that's definitely a big step in making space travel much cheaper.
No, that is awesome. That's freaking phenomenal.
Yeah, and one of the things, like, so the reason why they're trying to perfect this technique is, you know, the Falcon 9 rocket, which kind of like Millennium Falcon sounds pretty cool. It's the next stage of that is something they're calling the Falcon Heavy, which is going to be a much larger spacecraft that will be able to carry a lot of products into space. Basically, it's like the equivalent of, you know, a commercial airliner going into space, this heavy 9 rocket. It's going to be able to carry a lot of stuff. And for that, you know, Musk is saying that they're going to be able to put stuff on Mars by 2018.
Yeah, so with them sticking this landing, like, they actually, you know, that was actually a secondary goal. You know, the primary goal of this whole thing was to deliver a Japanese commercial satellite, JCSat-14, which they accomplished that goal as well. So, I don't know, freaking awesome.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the stats on how big this Falcon, the heavy Falcon is. But basically, where this Falcon 9 is a single rocket that's landing, you know, they're going to have the Falcon Heavy is going to have 3 stages of rockets. So all 3 of these are going to be going to have to return to Earth. So that's something that their next level of experiments, and they're calling this first Mars mission the Red Dragon. Yeah, it's the equivalent of a 737 jetliner going into space. So that's going to carry a lot of stuff.
Wow, that is freaking massive.
And with this you know, goal of being able to land on Mars by 2018, you know, they're wanting to be able to take, you know, robots and whatnot and stuff that they can eventually start building a city on Mars. Because, you know, with this, if, you know, they hit this 2018 goal.
Yeah, didn't Doom try that? And I don't think it worked out too well.
Well, you got to send some Space Marines in the first couple of landings. But yeah, eventually they're saying with this trips, they're going to be able to, you know, land robot stuff to start building cities on Mars. And they're planning on, because like I said, this first version of the Red Dragon is just going to be able to carry cargo. But the next, the Red Dragon 2, will be able to carry 7 passengers at a time plus cargo. And they're planning to be able to land humans on Mars by 2026.
Awesome.
So You know, if he is Tony Stark, yay. If not, he could be preparing his eventual Mars base, so when he destroys the Earth, he can, you know, rule us from Mars.
I mean, if there's a destroyed Earth, then we're not going to really be able to be ruled, right?
Well, maybe. I mean, he may not fully destroy it, but he just may, you know, take it over and rule us from his, you know, space castle.
Space castle.
If we're sticking with the possible Bond villain outcome. Or, tying into this new article, it may be a place we can flee from the eventual zombie apocalypse that is almost certain to happen at this point. Because...
Yeah, just this article's headline kind of makes me pucker up a little bit.
Yeah, because you don't... Do you want zombies? Because this is how we get zombies. the Institutional Review Board have given ethical permission to use stem cells to reactivate dead brains. Again, zombies.
Kill the brain, kill the beast. Reactivate the brain, reactivate the beast. This is how we get zombies.
Yeah, a biotech company in the U.S. has been granted ethical permission for an experiment. They're using basically 20 brain dead patients, which basically means the only thing keeping the body alive at this point is, you know, life support systems. Like the brain is completely devoid of any kind of function.
All right. Can I pause you right there?
And the name of the company is Reanima, which sounds like the company that would start a zombie.
Well, that's the name of the project. The name of the company is actually BioQuirk. And with a name like Quirk, you're just destined to screw something up. And a name like Reanima, yeah, I'm pretty sure that, you know, Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead, we got reanimated corpses. Yeah, not a thing to play around with here, folks.
Yeah, one of the researchers, Dr. Calixto Machado, and basically they're taking these patients and they're going to be trying to, you know, inject stem cells directly into the brain and see and try to stimulate, you know, nerves and reactivate the brains of these, you know, brain dead patients. Which, I mean, it's, you know, if it saves a life, yay. But yeah, if it just brings the dead back to life and we end up getting zombies, this could be very, very bad.
Unless we get like Fido zombies. Fido zombies probably wouldn't be that bad. Do you remember the movie Fido?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, good intentions are the pathway to hell. I don't know, man. Like, I might have some qualms with this one.
Yeah, basically, the central nervous system is a bioelectrochemical device, meaning chemicals called neurotransmitters transmit electrical signals through the body, which, you know, allows you to do the things you do. And with this, you know, stem cells are, you know, hopefully with, you know, some kind of electronic, you know, stimulation can rebuild these broken pathways in the brain to, you know, return some kind of functionality to the brain. But yeah, it's seems weird.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's seems like we might be potentially crossing over into a fine line, but who knows, you know, maybe only good comes from this. But
that's basically how every weird science horror movie starts, is something they're doing something supposedly for the benefit of mankind that goes horribly, horribly wrong, and it has the potential.
It just...
I've watched way too many zombie movies. This is how zombie movies start.
Yes. Have we not learned anything?
Yeah, so...
Maybe that's why we've gotten so many zombie movies. Maybe this stuff, just now coming out into the mainstream that... You know, it's approved, but maybe this has been something that people have been experimenting with decades, and, you know, there's already a brink of a zombie horde breaking out somewhere on an obscure island or something that nobody knows about yet that's just waiting to take over the rest of the world. I might be slightly paranoid, but...
Yeah.
I've only got about 1,000 rounds of 12-gauge... There's a lot more than 1,000 zombies that could potentially come up this.
Get your Colt Pythons and your Rick hat and be prepared. And with that, we'll be right back.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast delivers the latest sci-fi news plus movie and TV reviews with brilliant and insightful commentary. If you haven't listened to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast before, you will listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast now.
What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?
Watto, I'm telling everyone to listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will, including you.
No, they won't. I'm a Tritarian. My tricks don't work on me. Only money.
Okay, I don't have money, but please listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi, from a certain point of view.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News! Yippee-ki-yay. So we've got a lot of cancellations that have happened recently from the TV series.
It's a vast graveyard of TV shows.
And some that have been around for a while. So up first is Castle has officially been canceled after 8 seasons. And I was kind of digging Castle. Like, it was kind of sudden. I mean, I knew there were some beefs between, you know, some contractual stuff between some of the leading actors. And like, oh, well, maybe they can find replacements or something. But nope, apparently the entire series has got the axe.
Yeah, the original plan we heard was that Katie Stanek was not going to be returning for next season. But I don't think that would have worked without her anyway. So I'm kind of glad it got, because like him by himself, I mean, the whole dynamic of the show was them two working together to solve crimes. And that's when I've kind of, it's kind of fallen off this season. I still like got most of the season on my DVR that I've not watched yet. But it was basically, you know, he stopped working with the police and became like a private detective. So it was like him on his own and then her on her own doing stuff. And I'm like, it just didn't work. Like the premise of the show is them two together getting into shit.
Yeah. No, I could agree with that. I mean, it just, I don't know. You know, for these shows that have been around for, you know, 8, 10, 12 seasons and stuff like that, just to kind of get the axe. I mean, I could understand, like, you know, I don't know. You know, I mean, I guess I just don't know enough about the contractual stuff. You know, did a bigger, better opportunity arise? Did, you know?
I think it was like financial. They were like, you know, they didn't want to, you know, I guess pay her. They were trying to save some money, I guess, and were, didn't want to pay her anymore. And yeah, it's like that show's just not going to work with.
Yeah.
But hey, on the upside, he's free now to do other things. So, you know, maybe we'll get that Dr. Horrible 2 or another Firefly movie or something equally awesome. Because Nathan Fillion is awesome in no matter what he's in. So
yes.
I can't wait to see what
he does. You know, he's going to be successful and it's going to be something that's going to be as equally awesome and intriguing as what Castle was. It was just,
and maybe we can get him in the MCU now, because supposedly he may have a role in Guardians, I think it was. But yeah, I'd like to see him in a superhero movie. He's voiced a couple. I'd like to see him, you know, actually appear as a superhero
somewhere. Yep, absolutely. Another one that has gotten canceled is The Muppets.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of excited to see The Muppets come back.
Yeah, nostalgia only takes you so far.
And it just, well, I don't think it was marketed or branded and, you know, properly. And then two, it just, I don't know. I had a hard time getting into it myself, so.
Yeah, I only saw like a first couple episodes. It was kind of like they were trying to do The Office, but with The Muppets. And so it was kind of completely different than the original Muppet show. And I think it's, like I said, nostalgia only took it so far. when it wasn't, you know, the thing that everyone wanted it to be, that it, you know, kind of, you know, dropped off. No one wants to see the Muppets having adult problems.
No, I mean, that was
it's kind of funny for a 20-minute YouTube video, but a weekly show.
Not so much.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I can always remember the Muppets being lighthearted and stuff, so I don't know. You know, maybe somebody will pick up and do another animated series or something to that effect, but this just, you know, didn't cut it. And we also got another cancellation from ABC, and this is Agent Carter.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, man, like, the first season was on point. The second season, I could not get behind, or
it was so different from that first season.
And, I mean, even with the first season, it took three or four episodes, but once I was in, I was like, all right, I can see where this is going. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And then, you know, the second season, the things I was enjoying, just the dynamic all changed.
Yeah. And it never gave what I wanted to see, which was like the founding of S.H.I.E.L.D., like the early days of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I hope like with the second season we'd get into that, but no, yes. We went on a whole different adventure.
Do you think S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, since it had already been established and everything else, a successful TV series, do you think that was probably part of the demise? I mean,
I think that's one thing too. It's like, I think it was a good show, but it kind of, you know, showed up in the middle of S.H.I.E.L.D. and pushed S.H.I.E.L.D. back an extra month or so when people just wanted to see freaking S.H.I.E.L.D. If they had done like the CW is doing, we're having it run like simultaneously, like we get Flash one night, Arrow the next night, if it had run simultaneously with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it may have had a better chance than, you know, kind of being this interrupter in the middle of the season. You know, but we kind of ended with a cliffhanger. Thompson got shot, so I'd like to, you know, if they don't do another season, maybe a TV movie or a Netflix movie or, you know, just something to wrap up those loose ends.
Give a little bit of a closure.
Even if they do, like, you know, a very special episode of, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where they kind of show, like, a flashback to, like, you know, the founding of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something and, you know, kind of, you know, just wrap up those storylines or something, you know, to kind of give us some closure on that.
Absolutely. You know, up next, so Supergirl, it was originally rumored to be canceled and everything, and, you know, people were like, oh, come on, there's so much potential. Well, apparently it has now been picked up by the CW and will be renewed on their network.
Yeah, CBS canceled it, but the people who produce the show are the same people who produce Flash and Arrow, so now it's kind of coming back to the CW, so... I mean, they did that whole crossover episode where they kind of established her world as being one of the different realities. But at this point, they could kind of retcon that thing and bring her into the Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow family. And hell, we can almost get like a Justice League on TV.
And I mean, all of those shows are just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I feel like with Supergirl, there's a lot of potential there.
The other thing I really want to see out of that is... they've teased Superman on Supergirl, but you've never seen his face. You've kind of just seen him as like a blur or, you know, or at a distance. You've never seen him. But now that it's on CW, CW is the one who did the Smallville series. So who better to portray Superman than the guy who played Clark Kent in Smallville? I think that would be because he's kind of old enough now. He's, you know, it's, I don't know how many years it's been since Smallville went off the air, but, you know, they could, even if he's still kind of young, you know, they could, you know, age him up, throw some gray in his hair or something, and have him show up as Superman. I think that would be badass. They've already had, like, you know, Dean Cain from Lois and Clark playing her adopted father. It'd be kind of cool to bring another Superman, you know, in that we know.
No, that would be absolutely awesome. So, you know, I don't know, man. I feel like the CW has done an awesome, you know, job with their stuff. And kind of the sky's the limit with this. Like you said, there's a lot of different open opportunities here for, you know, Supergirl to really come on her own. So, you know, we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I'd like to see her team up with Barry and the Green Arrow. That'd be pretty badass.
All right.
'Cause that crossover episode they did was pretty good.
Yes, it was. I don't know, man. Like, it's bad that I've liked a lot of the TV series like Smallville and some of the crossover stuff a lot more than I've liked the full feature-length movies.
Yeah.
So, just my two cents there. Up next is we finally got the trailer for Kevin Smith Yoga Hosers.
Oh, wait a minute. I know we've talked about the Killing Joke trailer, but we actually have a release date for that now. I think it's like August 1st is the official, because like last time when we talked about the trailer, there was no release date for it yet, but they have since announced a release date.
Yeah, so for the Killing Joke, we have, oh, let's see,
it's sometime in August, I know, but I can't
remember. It's actually scheduled for release in the U.S. on July 23rd.
Ah, it's earlier than I last saw.
So I think I was with you. Some of the initial stuff was saying like August or something, but... you know, that's coming from IMDb, so
sweet.
All right. So up next is kind of the film. I mean, we had Tusk.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tusk is kind of the precursor. So now we've got Yoga Hosers, and the trailer has been released, and...
It looks weird. It doesn't look Tusk weird. Like, Tusk was a very dark movie.
No, it was very...
This is more of a kind of like Goosebumps or one of those teen horror movies that aren't very horrific, but still... Like I think Kevin said, this is the movie I would want to have seen if I was a 12-year-old girl. As a 37-year-old man, I kind of want to see it too.
Well, I mean, it's cool. You know, it's going to have Harley Quinn Smith, Kevin Smith's daughter, and then it's also going to have Lily Rose Depp, Johnny Depp's daughter. You know, so...
And Johnny Depp himself returning as Guy Lapointe, the Manhunter of Quebec.
We're also going to have Justin Long, Stan Lee, Kevin Conroy, and... And of course, you know, and Kevin Smith, he can't do a film without himself in there somewhere. So,
and what's his sidekick on Hollywood Babylon? Ralph Garman too is one of supposed to be one of like the big villains or whatever. But yeah, this is a movie with Nazi sausages in it. It's it's gonna be weird.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of funny. You know,
they're called Bratzies. Yes.
You know, originally the MPAA came out and gave this movie a R rating, but you know, Kevin was able to, you know, basically protest and everything else and get it knocked down to a PG-13. So I don't know, you know, I mean, I think it's already been played, you know, at Sundance, and I guess Kevin Smith will probably end up doing this like he did, you know, with some of the other stuff where he'll just basically do a tour.
Yeah, and... we've not gotten a release date for it like we did with Tusk. So currently, I know it's been popping up as kind of a roadshow like he did with Red State. But yeah, I haven't heard an actual release date yet. But yeah, I definitely want to see that if I can in theaters.
Absolutely. Another thing that got a release date, Doom. And... I have been watching gameplay, and I have been obsessing over this game since I saw Fight Like Hell. You know, I think it was Conan O'Brien that was doing.
Oh yeah,
some
the Clueless Gamer show. Yeah, that game looks pretty badass for a modern version of Doom.
Yeah, I mean it. You know, the one that they did probably, what was it, 2006, 2007, maybe like. It didn't have some of the Doom antics, you know. A lot of what I remember playing on the old MS-DOS days, and you just had hordes of monsters, and it was literally a no-frills, you just run and gun.
The last one I played, I think, was the original Xbox Doom, which was scary as shit. I mean, it did a good job. I think they re-released it later on like Xbox 360 as the BFG edition or something, but I never played that that newer version of Doom. But yeah, this looks freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, with the updated graphics, and I mean, it just looks like you got, you know, tons of Hellspawn and everything else going on. So I'm really curious. That's actually my goal for tomorrow, is to run out and get a copy of this game. So up next in big blockbuster news is we both now have had a chance to see Marvel's Captain America Civil War. You know, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but I thought the movie was absolutely awesome. I mean, it was ridiculously seeing that many superheroes at the same time. Yeah. Like, I can only imagine what Infinity War is going to be like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We may do like a full Captain America episode at some point, but yeah, this thing is just it's been the best Marvel movie so far. Especially with the Captain America series, it seems like every movie they do is like a different genre of film, where like the first one was a, you know, World War II period movie, the second one was a like political government drama type thing. But yeah, this one it's just awesome.
Yeah,
it's pretty much a revenge flick, nearly. I mean,
to an extent, yeah. But
we now know who the fuck Tom Holland is, and I gotta say, I'm looking forward to the
As far as live action Spider-Man go, Tom Holland has absolutely killed it on this version of Spider-Man, I think. I mean this almost felt like, you know, the Spider-Man, the animated series.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man, yes. I mean, you know, just with the quirky antics and
yeah, he's fighting heroes and fanboying over them at the same time. It's just the enthusiasm he shows in those fight scenes is absolutely
I could see, you know, 15-year-old Spider-Man, and that's exactly what it would be like.
Yeah. It just
and I think
and him and Tony Stark, their back and forth is hysterical. And
I think Stan Lee's cameo in this film is probably one of the best Stan Lee cameos yet. I mean, the Deadpool and him being the strip club DJ was pretty sweet, but I think this one may have even topped it.
Yeah, that's hysterical. And then also, I kind of like the weird buddy cop interaction between the Winter Soldier and Falcon.
Yes.
The dude is just not getting along. And like, it's like the petty arguments they're having. It's kind of hilarious.
So, I mean, I if you have not seen it yet, I would say to rush out and see it. You know, some of the early reviews that I saw, you know, basically said, oh, greatest superhero movie yet and everything.
The difference is, like, it's nearly a three-hour movie. And I didn't notice it was a three-hour movie. I mean, watching Batman v Superman was painful. I mean, I knew I was sitting there for 3 hours. But when this one, when it was over, man, I thought we still had like another hour to go. And I'm like, oh, crap, I've been here for 3 hours. Like, it did not stop through the whole movie.
And in typical Marvel fashion, make sure that you stay for the post-credits scenes.
And the post-post-credits scene.
And the post-post-credits scene. Like, sitting in the theater and, you know, I see people get up and walk. I'm like, amateurs.
Yeah. Yeah, because the first cut scene is never it. There's always something after. Marvel has trained us to sit all the way through a freaking movie now, to the point where you're going to see a regular movie and you still end up watching the whole damn credit just in case there's something at the very end.
But you know what? I think that's an awesome strategy, because oftentimes I think people see the films and they dip right after. And, you know, I'm starting to recognize...
It takes a lot of people to make one of these films.
Well,
and
you know, and I think those people deserve credit. And yeah, this kind of, you know, forces you, you know, to start looking at, you know, some of the, you know, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I know the director or maybe the producer. But, you know, you start learning some of the editors, some of the screenplay.
Most of this movie was filmed right here in Atlanta. And I could not pick out a landmark, and like, it did not look like Atlanta. I mean, no, they did good job.
I saw a thing of the African village, and you know, people thought that was filmed in some other country, but apparently it was like somewhere close to Atlantic Station.
Yeah, it's insane that, like I said, it. Yeah, cause I know they filmed some stuff in some other countries, but yeah, I mean, most of it was filmed here in Atlanta, and they did a good job of making it look like Germany or Africa or all these other different places that they go in the movie. And like I said, it was kind of awesome. The level of effects that were done to, you know, it didn't take you out of the film. It wouldn't like, oh yeah, I know that building.
And I would recommend, you know, to see this film in IMAX where possible.
Yeah.
Cause I gotta say that experience just, I mean,
for
you felt
the
immersed.
Airport battle alone, yes. The epic scale of it was so much better in the IMAX 3D.
All right, and with that wraps up news. Joe, any final thoughts, closing arguments?
Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com and the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. We're available on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are found. We have an Instagram and a Facebook and a Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod. We also have t-shirts at our Zazzle.com/cigar nerds and Real Men Love Cigar. Real Men Smoke Cigars. My brain is shut off today. Yeah, realmensmokecigars.com has the Cigar Nerd Smoking t-shirt. Check that out. And as always, make my day. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smoking Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.